help me welcome our speaker tonight, Dave from the Primary Purpose Group out of the Greater Wilkes-Barre area.
Hi everybody, I'm Dave and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Dave. And
I didn't even get up to the podium, I was drunk. So that's always a beautiful thing. Jim came up to me and held my hand and said, I hope you pray. And I did. I feel God here, that's for sure. This spot where I feel it. And so, that being said, I pray, you know, when I feel that, I feel like gratitude, and just like my sponsor always tells me to try to bring a message of hope. And, you know, I pray that I can. And, I pray that I feel the same way I do today for the rest of my life, that I could never, ever repay the debt to AA, that AA, the life and the God that AA has given to me. But I try to do the most I can. So, that being said, I'm from Wilkes-Barre, PA, up the old turnpike here. Actually, I was working on the elevator at the UCC on the other end of Swamp Road in Spinnersville this week, so I get down here quite a bit for work. Our office is in Allentown and stuff, so I work down this way quite a bit. I wrote down with my friend Joe tonight, and we had a nice talk on the way down. Thanks, bro. I always bring my office. Tuesdays at St. Peter and St. Clement Church on Hanover Street in Wilkes-Barre. And Thursdays we also have a beginner's meeting where the first 40 minutes are dedicated to people with less than a year. And then we open it up for the rest of the chair. My sobriety date is 1/30/2003. And it's pretty cool. Tonight my son has 90 days. So I had to go to my house and I went there my 90-day appointment form, dropped it off at the house for tonight. And I'll be seeing him when I get home. And that's a change. I'll be home tonight. I'll be home. I'll be a father. I'll be able to tell him I love him, I'll be able to mean it, and that's because of AA. This way I am is, I believe, how I've been built, you know, since that's the way God made me. And, it was sort of a liability, I believe, for a lot of years. Growing up, I grew up, I had an older brother, older sister, and, you know, like, through the steps, anything I've learned about myself, I've learned through the steps. And, it's interesting, you know, I know when Jeff and I talked, and, that this book's very, this, meeting is very book-oriented. And I would say that the first few years of my recovery weren't that way, they were more fellowship-oriented. But I tell you what, I got alright, you know what I mean? But I didn't get, I'm not well, trust me. I didn't get better than alright and nowhere near well until I did the steps. You know what I mean? So, that being said, when my brother and sister would bust out, recollection I could have, and I use it as an example, is like when Bambi's parents get killed in the movie, because I was probably 4, 5, 6, somewhere around there. Well, when they did it, I cried. I was, that affected me, and, you know, I felt that. And, you know, I get that back today. It's empathy.
my sponsor told me it's empathy. I never knew what it was, but it's empathy. Being able to feel what someone else can feel. What a gift. So when I did that, my brother and sister, I didn't know it at the time. I held resentments for a long time. They were doing their job, and they looked at me and they're like, wow, what a little baby. You know, and for myself, I felt it was kind of uncomfortable. So the next time I knew I was going to do that, I would grab a blanket and like hide underneath it. And obviously they'd know, and they'd be like, we know you're crying underneath there, you little baby. And from then on, you know, whether this has anything to do with, I can't really define alcoholism, I try not to, but I can tell that this affected me. From then on, I made up my mind nobody was ever going to see me cry again. And I believe, other than freak out modes, like nervous breakdowns and in rage, like my friends would tell people, if you ever see this guy crying, you may want to run. Until I came in, and when I came into AA, when I was fortunate enough to make it back here alive, I couldn't stop crying. I was broken. I sat and cried for months in meetings. Like, it was ridiculous. Trust me, it was what I needed. You know, I believe that. And, you know, AA is making me back to what I was when I was born. And, there was some other stuff going along. My resentment against God. 6 years old, I started, you know, I believe my parents took me to church. And what I heard out of the message, you know, there's a lot of good messages in church. I can hear that today. I can hear a lot of good messages everywhere today. Because my ears are open. My eyes are open. What I took out of the church was everything happens for a reason. And my mom was hit by a Greyhound bus and ran out of a red light. And she was hurt pretty bad. And what happened with her, she got sick. And she wasn't able to take care of me. So my grandmother stepped in. So rather than being grateful that my mother was alive and that my grandmother could come and take care of me and basically raise me for a while, you know, I got a resentment against God. Instead of being grateful, I went right away. I believed God hated me at that point, and I believed that with all my heart, because I believed that everything was done for a reason, and he took my mother from me because he hated me. And I truly believe that. And I hated God. And I let it be known, probably up until I was 3 months old. You could ask me, I would gladly tell you. You didn't even have to ask, and I would gladly tell you a lot of times. And that's unfortunate, but that's how, you know, that's the way my mind, that's the way I use the word askew, my vision's askew. My sponsor uses a little more, he's a big cursor, you know. And, I try not to, I do at times, but I try not to in AA, for sure, and I try not to most times, you know, but, like, you know, I'll be honest, I still curse, but some people throw the F-bomb around a little more than others, and you may be one. So, my vision on life is a little askew, and, you know, and then, when I was holding all that stuff in, I became, like, violent. Like, in school, my behavior was horrible. Just, anybody says, I remember my dad saying I was getting picked on, and my dad said to me, listen, I'm going to tell you this, and I'm sure a lot of people's dads told me that I'm 41, so a lot of people at my age, he would say to me, people pick on you, you hit them as hard as they hit you, or if not harder, and I guarantee you they'll think twice about messing with you again. And from then on, he was there a couple days a week at school. I think he regretted, that was one of the biggest regrets of his life, I'm pretty sure. So, from then on, it was, I was, hey, I had my free pass. This guy was, you know, picking on me. sit there and put the anger before I even picked, I was arrested before I even picked up a drink. And, so alcoholism, I know today has nothing to do with the drink. It's just how it was my solution. So I was suffering from alcoholism way before I picked up a drink, and, the first time I was arrested, I believe I was 11 years old, and the last time I was arrested, I was 33. And, I'll tell you what, I can see the progression of alcoholism. The first time I got arrested to the last time, the time in between every arrest, like I used to be able to walk off probation or what have you, like no problem. At the end, it was, they were starting to overlap. And the crimes that I was committing went from the time in between arrest got shorter and the charges got worse. So I can see, like they say, the progression of alcoholism. That I can see in my, you know, arrest and in my drinking, obviously. So I don't have the fortune to say every time I was arrested I was drinking. I pray, and I know that if I live this life today, I don't have to worry. I just got that. I got a call on the way home Friday from work that I got cleared to go into the Luzerne County Board of Police, which is, I was able to come to AA from the work release, you know what I mean? And it was, amazing, to do that, you know? My last drink, I hit the man with my car and left him for dead, you know? I was ringing the bell wasn't this Christmas, this past Christmas, with a friend of mine outside Walmart in Wilkes-Barre, and I saw Mike walk by, and, this program is just unbelievable, and God is just unbelievable, because I was able to walk up to him, look him in the eye, and say, hey, what's up, man, I love you, and give him a hug, and, it's only because of this program, and it's only because of the steps, because before I was into the steps, I couldn't forgive myself for that, you know what I mean, and, my sponsor talked about it being spiritual righteousness. Even if I can't forgive someone, I'm trying to be better than them. And if I can't forgive myself, you know, I need to forgive myself also. It's another form. But, I was never able to see that. And it wasn't like I was purposely doing it. It was just the way it was. And, so, you know, there was a lot of, 19 years old, my son was born. Despite the father I was, he turned out to be a wonderful young man because of his mother. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman, wonderful mother. And, I wasn't able to be there, you know, because I was busy doing whatever I wanted to do, when I wanted to do it, how I wanted to do it. And no matter who got in my way, I couldn't see this. It was, you know, I used to, the first couple years I got alcohol took stuff from me. And, it was brought to my attention really quick when I got hooked up with some people that I gave everything away, that alcohol never took anything. I really, looking at it the way I look at it now, I gave it away. I gave it here. You want this? Here you go. You want my family? There you go. You want this? I wouldn't anything except at the end the job. You know, because it's crazy how crazy as it was, you could have my family, you could have a lot of other things, but my job supplied what I needed, so you can't touch that. You know what I mean? I'll go get help. You know what I mean? So, you know, a lot of arrests, a couple DUIs, a couple other things that we don't talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and this, the first, here was the birth, my, example of the stuff I got my son for his birthday. When I was 10 years old, he's having the same emotional problems I was having when I was his age. And, you know, my parents sent me to anger management. And, what I used to do is I'd go there and, I mean, I've been, you know, 12 years old. I used to get the anger management guy. Jeff was his name. And Jeff, I don't think Jeff liked me. I used to make Jeff turn purple. Because he'd be telling, he'd be trying to coach me on anger management and stuff. And I'd be sitting there and I'd have the worst of that. I'd just be like, you know, 12-year-old, hey, the 12-year-old kid, we all want to choke him every now and again. So I can imagine that was me. And I would get this guy to scream first. He would bring my parents in and he'd be like, you see this kid? What's wrong with this kid? This guy's not teaching me anything about anger management. And then he'd snap even more. So this didn't work. But I did that. My son was having emotional problems because of my drinking. And I was going to be there. I was coming. We had a 6 o'clock appointment to go, or 5 o'clock appointment to go to the psychologist. I'm going to be there. I'm not around for him, and I've got to stop this. I can't stop all this drinking. I see where I'm hurting. So it was sort of maybe my first glance that I was hurting others. And so I got out of work around 1 o'clock and went out for 2 drinks. And 8 o'clock that night, I'm driving home fast because the appointment's gone. But it's 8 o'clock at night, I'm driving home, crashed my truck. I got this scar from here, my wig was split like from here all the way over, big flab on my head. And just, that was a week before Sam's birthday. Now, I go to the hospital and, just knowing that on top of the guilt and crash and everything else. That night, I remember when I went to the hospital, they were up. I'm not a doctor or anything and I don't know, but I remember them saying stuff about my, blood pressure and I knew that just by the sound of the voice, it didn't sound good. So what I did at that point is I pushed with all my might, trying to push all the blood out of my head. And all I remember is seeing red because there was blood just squirting everywhere. And I woke up the next day. Like, probably first suicide attempt, you know? I guess first and only. They describe it in the literature, that horror of that next morning waking up. Just not knowing, just like, how could I still be alive? How could I possibly still be alive? And then we move forward, you know, I'm sure I'm not telling you guys anything, all the, you know, the joys that go with the, being charged and stuff, so. But I'm just gonna stop drinking. No need to worry, everybody. I'm gonna stop drinking. So, at that time, I really was under the illusion, delusion, what have you, that I could do it by myself. So, for about a week and a half, I was good. I didn't do anything. I was chilling out. I was, going on the treadmill at the house, and I was doing okay. And I got a call. My friends are going to Darling. So I figured I could just go up and, hey, it's been a week and a half. Seem to be doing well. I could probably have 2 beers. I forgot that I was only going out for 2 beers. I just got, I got tricked somehow. So I went up for 2 beers and my wife at the time looked at me and she said, Dave, I had a tendency to take off for a couple of days. Dave, if you don't go home tonight, don't bother going home. And I'm like, go home for 2 beers? I mean, come on. So, 7 o'clock in the morning the next day, she's like, I come popping in, and she's like, I don't know where you're going, but you can't stay here. And I said, I was, at that time, something broke inside, and I was like, I'll do anything. So, she's like, okay, then you're going to rehab. And I'm like, okay, then I'm going to rehab. And I packed a bag, and I drove my dad, and my dad drove me up to a rehab up in Scranton. And I didn't know anything about recovery or anything. I walked into the place with the bag. I'm like, hey, I need help. Can you guys help me out? And they're like, do you have an appointment? I'm like, no, I got my bag packed here and I need help. And they kind of looked at me like I was off the wall a little bit. But I guess I had good insurance because they took me for a couple of weeks. When the fog cleared, you know, I was detoxed for a couple of days. I remember I was like probably about 300 pounds, and I didn't have, see, I drank at the bar, so my legs were like probably the size, my thighs were probably the size of my forearms, you know what I mean? It was like, but I was like, it was hilarious. I looked like a ham standing on two toothpicks. My blood pressure was 190 over 110. You know what I mean? And, about 300 pounds. And, once the fogs cleared, they gave me a buddy, and I got the buddy, he showed me around and met me a couple of people, and I said to myself, I said, whatever they tell me to do, I'm going to get some family thing in there, and we did some, step work, or, you know, rehab stuff. And, so by the time the fog cleared, it was time for me to go. But I tell you what, I participated, I tried my best, and I believe with all my heart that I was never going to drink again when I left there. And, I got the stuff, I got the rehab stalls 90 and 90, you know. I know it's daily for me, you know what I mean? I was never told 90 and 90. I didn't go to rehab this time, I came straight to AA. I did that, and for 16 months, I came to meetings every day, and meetings are, trust me, I'm not bashing meetings and people that just go to meetings at all. I'm just giving this is just what happened to me. I went to meetings every day, I got a sponsor, and he would have me do some work, and I would just like, wait till the last, he'd give me a deadline, I'd wait till the last second, I would, you know what I mean? And I got, that's the result I got. At 16 months, I was crazier than the day I walked in. I came to, the home group I have today is the home group I had then, that I came late to and left early, and wasn't, looking back at it, I didn't know how to make coffee. I lacked so much humility that I couldn't walk up to Ed and say, hey Ed, could you show me how to make coffee? And by that point, I'm sure he was glad, because when I made it back 2.5 years later, he's like, oh, it's all yours. It's all yours. And, which is a big part of my recovery. I love it. Yeah. So, 16 months, I'm going, my wife's giving me a ride to a meeting, we start arguing, and she told me to get out. So, I opened up the door and jumped out of the car while I was moving. On my way to a meeting without a drink in me, I rolled into the meeting, I'm like, this is it, I'm gonna drink, I'm like all scraped up, and Ed from my home with his coffee guy, they call him Angry Ed. So Angry Ed, I watched him. The one night when we got sober, he shared at the beginner's meeting, at that time it was just like a round circle, probably about 12 people. The people on this side of the room were like all at the other end of the horseshoe there by the time he got, and by the time he ended the share session. And, but he told me, he looked at me and he said, Dave, that's not an option. And there was another guy there that looked at me and said, go ahead, drink. And, I didn't listen to Ed. Within 3 days, I was drinking again. And, I'm a blackout drinker, and that's how I do it. And it's weird, because it's crazy, because I was thinking about, just about, even about, like, Wilkes-Barre. When I was coming, like, I never knew anything about Wilkes-Barre, let alone, I never knew anything about my family until I came into recovery. Because I could care less. Because it was all about me. Like, I didn't know that my grandfather never drank because he watched his brothers drink themselves to death, and that's what the braces do. We drink ourselves to death. We drink ourselves to wet brain. And, now this is just what I think for myself. With the blackouts I had when I first started getting blackouts, like, you could tell me what I did, and I'd be like, okay, yeah, that happened, I remember that. And then I had a blackout buddy, my friend Charlie. So we'd go out together, and I would sort of leave him the next day, like, yeah, that was awesome last night, da da da. And he, after a week or two, he's like, you have no idea what happened, right? So you fill me in on the night. Someone had told me about it, but some stuff I could remember. And then it progressed to, I can't remember anything. Yet. Hey, you tell me what happened. This is the way it is. And, so this is just what I keep in my heart. That if I keep drinking, if I ever pick up a drink again, I will, what's it called, go into a wet brain, because I can see the progression of the blackouts. This is just what I, for myself, and, when I drank again, like, you know, like I told you about the 10th birthday, what I turned into, I never thought, like, I always consider myself, even though I drank a lot and I might have done some crummy stuff, I consider myself a half-decent guy. I mean, if you would have asked me, I'd be like, I'm not great, but I'm not super bad. I'm like, I would say I'm middle-of-the-road guy. I was definitely not middle-of-the-road when I drank again. I treated my family horribly. Did horrible things to them. And I can admit that today. It was a bad day. And it didn't have to happen because I had the answer. I wasn't. I hear people talk about, like, oh, did you see that? So-and-so celebrated 3 years, man. They got it right the first time they came, and they are so lucky. They're not lucky. They were willing to do the work that they needed to do to stay sober. I wasn't when I came in. Like I said, and it got worse. You know, the blackouts, and it ends in going out for a couple of years again. And I don't know, I can't tell you exactly what happened. I'll tell you what the police report said. It said that I left the bar at 12:30, and on my way home, there was a man out in front of the bar getting into his car, and I hit him with my car. I took his leg from him, and I left him for dead. I drove home like it never happened. And I'm told in my head, you know, just because you don't remember it doesn't mean it doesn't happen, and it didn't mean that you're not accountable for it. And here's the hard part. When your sponsor looks you in the eye and he says, listen, if you could have stopped and you would have remembered, would you have stopped? And when you can say in your heart that you don't know, that's the answer I had to come for myself, because that was the truth. That was my truth. My sponsor's big on, that's my truth. You know, I could lie and say that I would have, but I can't. I don't know that I would have. And, you know, when I found out the next day what I had done, it was snowing that night, and there was like a light snow, and it was coated all over the car. So I went home passed out, and my wife comes in, she's like, Dave, what'd you hit? And I'm like, I don't know. I must have bumped a pole. Alcoholics, we never hit anything, we just bump. We bump. You know, I must have bumped the pole. Now the car was, alcoholic car smashed in the back on this side, front on that side, so it was, and I looked up, I just looked out the window, and I went, that's not much damage, I must have set a pole or something. So then they're looking for, it's all over the news that there's a hit and run, and stuff for dead in the hospital in critical condition. And, it's on the way home from the bar. I'm like, there's no way, you know, if I would have done that, I would have had that. So I actually got out of bed that time, went out and looked at the car, and there's no way that could be. Now they're looking for a blue car on the way home, and my ex was going nuts. She's like, Dave, I'm telling you, you hit somebody. And I was scared to death. I went outside, and I looked at the car, and I looked, and I brushed away where it was at, and there was skin there. And, like, I had a lot of suicidal thoughts when I was drinking. I mean, tell you, especially towards the end. All those thoughts came rushing back to me. There's like a something that I've learned from AA that inside of me, like alcohol, I gave alcohol a lot. There was a part, like, right here that was off limits. And that was the part that God wouldn't have let me give away to alcohol. When I found out what I did, I turned myself in. And like I said, all those thoughts of suicide. I mean, I'll give you looking back, I couldn't see this stuff in my life at the time, and I'm grateful to be able to look back at it now. I was working at Graysdale down in Nazareth, and we were on the elevators there. And we were working on an Alzheimer's ward, and we had to put the elevator up the top floor and to do all our work. So we had to walk through. It was like a straight thing through to the nurse's station, so you had to walk on either side of it to get to the machine room. So we parked the car up there, and I'm working with my buddy, and every day I feel like it's 11 floors, and I'm feeling like I just throw yourself down the hatch. You know, your family did double indemnity, nobody will even know it was to be an accident. So I walked over to the thing, and there was this lady in the room, and she had Alzheimer's, she didn't know what was going on. And she would sit in the room, and as I walked by, she'd be rocking in her thing, and she'd look at me, and she'd go, "You're a good boy." And I'll tell you what, I would be like, "Oh, I'm a good boy." And I'd walk up and I'd do whatever I had to do. I would find myself walking across, I mean, I'd walk there like 10 times a day. At that point, I believed that that woman, even though she didn't know what was going on, saved my life. I truly believe that in my heart. And that's just stuff I can't see. When I'm drinking AA, takes the, you know, curtain down. And there's a lot of other instances. So, I came to AA, because my parents, everybody's like, "You have to go back to rehab," and I'm like, nothing against rehab, so I'm like, they tell you to AA. I did see some change in some people, you know what I mean? I knew it worked. Even when I was drinking, I would see people in the program, they would say, I'm telling you, I've seen that, or I've seen people change it. I was like, drunk, but I knew AA worked. It was insane. So I came back, and I would come to the meetings, I was, the job's gone, and I gave the job to, my boss, he's my boss today still. And I called him up and I said, "Steve," and he's like, he knew it was inevitable. He's like, "Oh, Dave." And I said, "Steve, I'm going to jail. I don't know when and I don't know for how long." And he said, "Do you want to take a let off?" I said, "If you could do that, that would be, I don't know what to do." And I started going to meetings the next day. The clubhouse in Mills Square, and they had 7:10. Noon, 4:30, and the night meeting, and I would stay there from 7 to 10. I would get there, I was like, and like I said, I'd sit in the corner and I'd cry. I would just cry, and I didn't know which end was up, and I was so scared that if I took a drink, that I would kill somebody. And I remember I did sort of realize this time that I remembered that jumping out of the car thing, so I was like, I don't think you're drinking is a problem. And really, I was moving it to like the old timers at the 10 was, they called it the eye opener for the unemployed. It was all like overtime. Well, a lot of luckily retired men that were, you know, able to live till retirement because of AA. And I would come in and they just be like, they were just so nice. And sort of told me. They were nice, but in a sometimes brutal way. And it was awesome. And those guys
awesome. But I used to get in trouble because I would leave the tent and I'd get in trouble. I'd be going, I lived like a mile away, so by the time I was walking, I was like a rabid dog. People would, like, I'd say hi to somebody and they wouldn't say hi, and I'd be like, what do you think, you're better than me? And I'd be like, I would like spit, and I would spit on people and like grab them. I couldn't act. I had no idea. And then they'd go like this, they're like, the guys at the tent are like, kid, you just go, be brave and not do anything, and you just keep going straight. You just walk straight home, don't look at anybody, don't say hi to anyone, because you're going to kill somebody, you know. I went back to home group, and there's Ed there. Ed was apparently doing some step work, and he wasn't like happy yet, he was like not so angry yet. So I went up to him, I'm like, hey Ed, do you think you can teach me to make coffee? He's like, you got it. It's all yours. And they started making coffee there, and a bunch of guys scooped me up. And these guys, I didn't know it, but they were like, they're step-oriented guys, but they didn't, like, you got, like, there's some people that, like, everything's about God when you talk to them, and that's great. That would have put me off, and I would have, they probably would have been uncomfortable around me at the beginning, so I didn't. And they scooped me up, however, and took me for coffee, and did what we do. They loved me until I loved myself. And they invited me to New York, and I was like, the whole God thing wasn't, I knew I had to get God, or I was going to drink again, and I was going to go somewhere, God, or what happened. And there's this kid, Brandon, from he was from New Jersey, and I'm thinking about Brandon, we're going to New York, he's from Jersey. So they take me to New York, I'm out on a bail, and they promise, I'm like, I don't know if I should go, but they won't let anything happen. So it's like, we're in Washington Square Park, there's a lot of millions of people in New York City. And I have that feeling, and I look over, and we're in Washington Square Park, and this kid comes walking by me, Brandon. And I'm like, that's Brandon. I didn't think about it. So I couldn't say hi there. I had zero humility. I waited till he got over there. I'm like, Brandon! And then when he turned around, I'm like, wow. And we hugged and we talked. And that was like the first glimpse. I'm like, there's something. There's something. That was my first look that I felt something. I felt it that day. I started praying the next day, I believe, and I haven't stopped since. The next day, I forgot to pray, and I'm on the way to the meeting in the morning, and I realized I forgot to pray, and I got right down on my knees in the middle of Hazel Street in Wilkes-Barre and prayed. And I'll tell you what, since that day, my life hasn't been the same. I started praying for the man that I hurt, and his family. I started getting involved, like I said, I was getting involved with the homeless, so I was getting better in some areas, and you know, and the anger was still hanging around there, and fear. The fear runs the show, and it's, God's fully there. And it was weird because I went and I pled guilty to it, because I was. It was crazy. I was the only guilty guy. it was weird. People wouldn't even talk to me. They're like, look at, see that guy over there. They're like, I want to tell you a story. I'm like, I'm guilty. And you see that guy over there? He's guilty. So I pled guilty and I had to go to court. And with the crime that I did, obviously I had a face. Like, I knew, I had been going to the Monday night tradition meeting, because it was the only meeting in Wilkes-Barre. So I knew that I wasn't going to use AA as, I'm going to AA and everything's going to be okay. You know what I mean? I wasn't going to do that. And, but when it came time, I know, sorry, I didn't cut it, but I didn't know what else to say. I told him that I was sorry, and that I've been praying for him and his family, and that I was taking steps to ensure that this would not happen again anyway. He had a tablet as thick as this, and he started, those are big ones in backstage, he read. And, so he started reading it. And he said, he opened up and he said, Mr. Grease, I don't know if you know it or not, but we know a lot of the same people. And they tell me you're a good man, but you're sick and you need help. And he started saying it from like that. And he's like, I can't. And he got upset. And he's like, I can't do it like this. And he shut the thing. And he told me about how his God loves him. And he knows his God loves me. And he knows that his God wants me to be forgiven. And he wants his God. His God wants him to forgive me. And he told me that he forgave me in court. And I can tell you, it was unbelievable. I walked out of there a different man. I can say that. Our families, like, I didn't just affect him, I affected his family. My family, there wasn't a dry eye in the courtroom. It was unbelievable. A lot of the resentment I felt my whole life just washed away that day. And I've since done step work to make sure that it stays washed. But that was like the big thing. I mean, he asked for the lightest sentence for me. I was able to go to work release. I was able to go to meetings. I got my 9-month coin when I was going to jail, going to the meetings for work release. And got hooked up with a sponsor from work release. Like I said, he was a step guy, but he was not like really out of the book step guy. He was more or less a principal. Really God-based, really principle-based, but not literature-based. So I learned a lot from him. And I love Henry. He's awesome. I mean, he lives this deal. He lives it. And for myself, I have struggled in areas, so I need the literature. And I was asking people to, I saw that the big people were, I mean, you know, like the people that were doing it out of the literature were a lot more stable. And I wanted to do that, so I started asking around. Like, just taking it, it was more or less taking it to the next level, doing what have you. And I started asking around, I couldn't find anybody. I would find somebody and we'd go 2 weeks and then they wouldn't show up. And I'm telling them, I got disheartened. I'm like, you know what? These people aren't, they say all this stuff and when you ask them, they don't show up. And I started talking to people. I'm like, I'm done. And I started going to, there was this camp out. It's a Practice These Principles camp out. It's up in Hickory Run. And I started going there. And there was this dude, Sim. He is awesome, man. He'll talk and he'll scream and he's like, I'm fire. And I just, something happened to me and I'm like, alright, I can do this. And I started studying it by myself. Doesn't work well, but I had nothing else. I was going by what they were teaching it down. I was trying to apply that stuff into my life. And I was ready to, like I said, I didn't know what to do. And then last year, I got remarried with somebody. You know, when I, like a lot of stuff, it's been weird. Like right when I was getting out of jail, my wife, my ex-wife, my first wife, she asked me to leave, and so it hasn't been like peach and cream. When I was getting out of jail at that time, she asked me to leave. 2 months later, I almost got killed. I got sliced from like here to here, trapped in the elevator, which was awesome because that story where I was pumping the blood out of my head, that time I laid on the floor and like all my guts are hanging out and stuff, and I'm like, I got this feeling like, it's gonna be okay, you're not hurting anybody today. It's gonna be okay. If you die, it's no big deal. But you're not. But I had such a feeling of peace. Just from living a certain way, not even making amends or any of the step work. Plus I got 17 months off from work. Which was pretty cool to do meetings and do like a lot of other stuff for to get grounded and recovered. So I got hooked up. Like I got remarried and they did the man at the house. Stuff. It came out of left field. I didn't know. I thought everything was okay, and apparently it wasn't. So, I didn't really go nuts or anything, but I knew. I just started praying. I said, I need somebody in my life that's supporting me. I won't bring me through this. And I know years ago, we went to Ybah in California together, and I asked him, I got hooked up to a friend, and I asked him to sponsor me, and he's been taking me and doing the step work with me. And I'm telling you what, like, I wouldn't change anything. It was what it is. I mean, I had to go through what I had to go through. I was crazy for a little bit here, a little bit there, you know, but I'm trying to get better. Trust me, I'm a work in progress. I try to do the best I can. Throughout the whole thing, I've tried to help others. Maybe I didn't have the tools to help them the way they needed to be helped, but I probably fell short and maybe was, you know, doing some not experienced strength and help and maybe a little opinion and maybe not out of the book, and I was wrong in those cases. But my whole intention was out of love. And now I'm getting the tools to show somebody and guide them the way I'm being shown. And it's beautiful, you know, and it's, to be able to do that, I've never thought, all I really ever wanted in life is to be useful. You know what I mean? Like, the thing I want to help people. I've always wanted to be helpful. I just never had the tools or any means or any wherewithal to even want to help anybody. It was all just about me. And, I'm so grateful, because when I was in Florida watching a friend of mine get married, my son was in a car accident and got a SIP out of his socket. And this is how, night and day. Right now, for the last month and a half, as part of, I'm living with my first wife. It's weird, I'm not even divorced from my second wife, it's crazy. But I'm living with my first wife in her house to help my son, to be there for my son. She and I get along like better than we ever did when we were even dating or anything. It's just unbelievable, and it's because when my son wanted help, he looked at me and he said, "Do you think you can take me to some meetings?" And I've been, you know, grateful to hear that. And he looked at me and he goes, "I've seen what this thing has done in your life. I've seen how it's changed your life. And I see that you're a different man today, and I want that life." Like, that's the deal. That's AA. That's what all this stuff did for me. You know what I mean? It doesn't, if you do the work, it does it. It's just unbelievable. For my son to say that he was scared, he was afraid to death. Scared to death of me when I first came in when I was pregnant. And for that change, to know that AA made that change in my life. Just a relationship with God. I've had so many different things. Like I go Easter. I've become, and I just mentioned this as, you know, the man that forgave me, Mike, he's led me to my faith. You know what I mean? And it's because of his example that I've changed and I've been willing to grow. And when I say that, I go every, they invited me up for Christmas. And I spent Easter with him and his family. I mean, they're an amazing, amazing God-centered family. And God-centered God, he keeps putting God-centered people in my life. And people that need God. And that's awesome because I have something to offer them today. You know what I mean? Because I was godless and hopeless and everything else. And today, because of AA, I'm not that man. And it's, you know, it's here for everybody. That's what's awesome. The first time, if you're here for the first time or the 20th time. Whatever you're here. Talk to somebody that my sponsor said you can see the light. You can see the light in their eyes. You can see them. Just talk to somebody that's talking about God. No matter how uncomfortable it is for you. It'll help you. It might not change your life now, but it'll definitely help you and it might plant a seed. Man, I'm telling you. And, without God, I'm a dead man. I know that today. And without a sponsor, I'm a dead man. And without a home group, I'm a dead man. And without meetings, there's a lot. And without service, without all that stuff, I'm dead. And, before that, I'm probably gonna hurt a lot of people. So, with that being said, everything I have today, I owe to AA. And I pray that I can stay grateful and that I can continue to give back. That's all I can do. And I want to thank you guys for having me so much. Thanks.